Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I saw the thing coming out of the sky. It had a one long horn and one big eye. I come Mr. Shaking and I said, ooh-wee. It looked like a purple people eater to me. It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
A one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. Sure looked strange to me.
One-eyed.
Well, he came down to earth and he lit in a tree. I said, Mr. Purple People Eater, don't eat me. I heard him say in a voice so gruff,
I wouldn't eat you, 'cause you're so tough.
It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. Sure looks strange to me.
One-horned.
I said, Mr. Purple People Eater, what's your line? He said, eating purple people, and it sure is fine. But that's not the reason that I came to land.
Rock and roll band.
Well, bless my soul, rock and roll, flying purple people eater. Pigeon coat, undercoat, flying purple people eater.
He wears short shorts.
Friendly little people eater. What a sight to see.
Oh!
And then he swung from the tree and he lit on the ground. And he started to rock, but really rocking around. It was a crazy kitty with a swinging tune.
Sing a bop. Boop-a-loop-a-loom-bam-boom.
Well, bless my soul, rock and roll, flying purple people eater. Pigeon toad, undercoat, flying purple people eater.
I like
George, George. Flying
purple people eater.
What a sight to see.
Purple people.
Well, he went on his way, and then what do you know? I saw him last night on a TV show. He was blowing it out, really knocking him dead. Playing rock and roll music through the horn in his head.
Tequila.
Y'all see what happens when we leave Pam alone too long? Well, welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters. And maybe a Twisted Mister or two. One just never knows. Oh, my God. Hello, Pam, and hello, Miss Weaver. Oh, goodbye, Miss Weaver. Well,
uh-oh.
We lost Kate.
Well, hopefully so, she'll call back.
Yeah, right now it's just Pam and I. Miss Naomi is taking care of a friend, so she won't be joining us this evening. And, yeah, so what else is up, Pam? How are you today? Oh, Kate's back. Look, she's back.
What's that?
I said she's back. Hello.
Hey.
Welcome back. Well, she's gone again. I think we're having a headset problem.
Yeah, so, that would be my guess. Is that she?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I am doing really good. The weather, the temperature hasn't been super hot, but it's been
right.
So freaking humid.
Yeah.
And yeah, nice 4th of July with some grilling and some roasting marshmallows, you know, just really it was just me and my daughter, but so nice and laid back and, you know.
Yeah, with that.
All good. And how about you? How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, you know, tired as always. That's my standard. That's my go-to.
Yeah.
Otherwise doing well. We had my son and his girlfriend, they barbecued on Sunday. Yesterday was just kind of a quiet, laid-back kind of day. Kids did some sparklers last night. And, so it was quiet. It was simple. It was easy. Me, you know, I was just sleeping, catching up on it. Eventually, I'm going to catch up. It's not going to stay away from me forever. And, you know, but, it's just been decent. It's been a good good way to start off the week, you know, quiet, easy, all good. So, yeah. And a crazy dog is over here, like, you know, he's talking to somebody. I don't know if anybody out there, but So if you hear them, just ignore them because everything's peachy.
Yeah. Yep.
Maddie keeps opening the door to come back. So it's like, wow, really? Yeah. So everything's going well. So tell us all about this contest that Naomi ran for tonight.
All right. So as you mentioned, Naomi can't make it because she is helping a friend, but she'd happened to ran a contest. And I can only tell you what Naomi told me is that the idea for this contest came to her because her granddaughter had dyed her hair purple. And her daughter was just, I don't remember the exact word Naomi said, but she was kind of, I guess, not sure what to think of it. And Naomi said, well, just call it periwinkle. It sounds so much prettier that way. And then, so with that being said, and I laughed at that, and, you know, Naomi said she came up with this idea for the contest that she ran on Old Poetry, which actually features a variety of artwork and photography that has features different shades of purple, pink, and periwinkle in it, which is really beautiful stuff in a wide variety. So there's no specific artist that it focuses on, but rather instead takes a look at those specific colors. So I thought it was a pretty cool idea. It's got definitely a great lineup of poetry tonight. So I'm really thankful to Naomi for running that contest and to her granddaughter for dyeing her hair periwinkle.
Absolutely. All inspiration is welcome, you know?
Absolutely.
One of the contests, or writing the words. Yes, absolutely.
I wasn't sure what intro song Naomi would have chosen, but, you know, I thought, what the heck? Let's go with the one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. I thought about Prince's Purple Rain, but as much as I like that song, it's a little on the downer side, and I wanted upbeat.
I'm so sorry. My son's girlfriend. My son's girlfriend heard the dog whining out the door, so she knocked on the door to see if she could let him out. So, hang on. Now I have company again.
Not so much.
Right. So, yeah, we definitely have a great lineup of poetry for tonight, and. Yeah, purple, pink, periwinkle. Those are very feminine and cheerful colors, especially pink and periwinkle. Soft. They're soft colors. All right, and hello to PC hanging on the board in Late Night Poets.
Yes,
good
hello,
to see you.
Yeah, sorry about that. I think everybody's done yammering with me. Oh, God, everything happens at 10 o'clock in my house. Everything.
Yeah, I know how that goes.
Yeah. The only time anybody wants to come in and have a conversation, it's amazing. Okay. Well, it's still the two of us, Pam, so I'm not sure what's happening. But, I guess we can
all
do
right,
whatever it is you want to do.
All right. Well, I guess we'll just go ahead and get the show started. I have a small dog barking in the background, but not much I can do about that. So,
We're together. We've got a small dog in the background. We're good.
When there you go. They get them harmonizing.
Yeah, there you go. They keep that crap up. We're going to make them read poetry. There you go. Ouch.
All right. Well, for tonight, I have two intro poems, and the reason I have two is because they're, first of all, extremely short, and second of all, they're written by the same author. And I think the first poem, the second one is the answer poem, and why I chose them I think will be pretty obvious. But I'll put up the link for the first one, read that, then put up the link for the second one, read that, and then we'll comment. So,
okay.
All right. So up first we have The Purple Cow by Gillette Burgess, and it goes like this. I never saw a purple cow. I never hope to see one, but I can tell you anyhow, I'd rather see than be one. End poem.
No.
And now for part two of that. And all right. And up next we have The Purple Cow Suite, and it goes like this. Yes, I wrote The Purple Cow. I'm sorry now I wrote it, but I can tell you anyhow, I'll kill you if you quote it. And boom.
There you go. Oh, my gosh.
I tell you, this just cracks me up. Well, first of all, I can see why he wrote the second part. Now, it's funny because the Purple Cow is one of those poems that has gotten parodied over and over again. And right. I can just imagine being Gillette Burgess and writing this silly little Purple Cow poem, not thinking anything of it, and having it be the poem that you become most famous for.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and so then writing this response poem, I thought it was great. And of course, you know, with since the show is Purple Pink Periwinkle, how was I going to pass up poems that had to do with purple cows? So,
that's,
you know.
Right. That's right. That would be terrible if you did. Absolutely.
So what do you think, Jill?
I think they're cute. I think they're fun. You know, the fact that the one is, I guess, technically in response is interesting. That two did one, and now he did another. So, hey. But I agree with you on this, you know, if you kill you, if you quote it. So, just, it was a good response to it. You know, definitely. But, yeah, it was a good choice for tonight. You know, it fit the mood, and it fit you, you know. So, I mean, it's definitely a Pam and a purple kind of concept there. You should have had a purple cow on your image for tonight. Just saying. And what you were thinking, Pam.
Oh, that would have been, I wish I had thought of that. Dang it. I don't know why I didn't. Wow.
That's why I make the big bucks here. Not. Hey, we got two callers.
Awesome.
Here we go, Pam. We're going to try this again. We have Weaver, who I'm going to pick up now. Hello, Kitty. Are you with us? Still don't hear her.
Huh, yeah, must be a headphone problem.
Headphones are so touchy sometimes. I would go crazy trying to keep them because, you know, if they worked yesterday, they should work today. So that frustrates me. Okay, and our next caller is area code 760. Hello, 760. Who's calling, please?
Is this the bartender?
Well, I've been called worse. Absolutely.
Hi, Pam.
How goes it tonight, Dean?
Hey, Dean. How are you guys tonight?
Doing
well.
Good.
How are you?
Very good.
Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. Pam, we got another voice. Yay! Life is good.
All right. Nice to have another voice. And I'm sorry, I missed the name and I don't recognize the voice.
It's PC.
Oh, PC. Okay. Sorry about that, PC. Good to have you join us.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Did you hear the intro poems, PC?
Oh, PC says, I didn't call in yet. LOL.
Oh, well, then who are we speaking to? Oh, my God.
I'm on the line with you guys, though.
Go ahead, Tim.
And I could comment on Mr. Burgess's poem, but I'm afraid to quote it. I could paraphrase it.
Uh, okay, so now I'm now my wheels are turning. I think it's Scott, isn't it?
It is. Okay, wow. I am so sorry, Scott.
My voice wasn't registering. That's okay. I'm not quite sure why I thought it was PC, but I did. What can I say? A little crazy I am.
Too funny.
Oh, I'm telling you, I'm flipping, guys.
I don't know who the other person you had calling in was, because you said you had two calls online.
The other one didn't connect. She can't hear us.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, absolutely. So, okay, Pam, I'm on your team, whatever you want to do.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and move forward, and glad you could join us, Scott. And hopefully Weaver will be able to get through. But, you know, we definitely know how technical problems go. All right. Up next, we have Pink Kalush Cat by Rosewinter 515. And Jean, will you give that a read for us, please?
That's my side. This is my side poem. Pink Kalush Cat by Rosewinter 515. Pink Hat Orchestra, Kalush Swept Universe Stars. Stefania, Ukraine, Eurovision Song Contest, World Peace Prayer Lullaby. And the poem.
Great read there, Jean and Scott. Your thoughts on this poem?
Well, I like that first line. It's catchy. Pink Hat Orchestra, Kalush Swept Universe Stars. Huh. Yeah, that's very interesting. For such a short poem, it definitely has some great images created. Love the thought of world peace prayer and lullaby at the end as well. So very good job on Rose's part.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is a wonderful brevity for sure. I like how it's a celebration of music and the hope for world peace all put into a few lines. So very well done there. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought this was nicely penned. The Pink Hat Orchestra, I thought was an interesting lead-in line because automatically you get that visual and it kind of almost brings a smile to your face, you know. The universe stars, and it speaks of Ukraine, but that last line was really the one. Who could ask for anything more than that world peace, you know? It's just a wonderful job. So great job, Rosewinter 515. Very well done.
Absolutely. Boy, I have to agree with you that end line does wrap it up nicely with the thought of world peace. So great comments. All right. And let's see what we've got next. All right. And up next, we have Musical Carousel That Played Dixie by Daniel Duhane. And Scott, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Musical Carousel That Played Dixie by Daniel Duhane. Before heading off to the Great War, General Stonewall Jackson gave his youngest daughter a toy carousel that played Dixie. Tucking her in bed, he told her, "Don't worry about your old pa. I'll be back for apple blossom time and dance with my favorite girl. Now you hang on to this and pray this war ends quickly." With these words, he tucked her in bed before leaving her room, extinguishing a lamp on his way out, then walked down the stairs to his wife, waiting on the stoop with tears in her eyes. "Now you listen here, don't let any bullets get you. Ah, Ma, you worry so much. You're like an old quackling guinea hen. I'll be back in no time without even a scratch." With that, he kissed her cheek before entering the night and into the history books. end poem.
Wonderful read there, Scott. Yeah, and I have to say, I really find this a very fascinating write that makes me want to look up more about General Stonewall Jackson. I mean, you know, I know the basics about him, but I didn't even, you know, I don't even really know if he actually had any daughters or children, although I'm guessing he probably did, or if he had one that he actually gave a carousel to that plays Dixie, or if this is kind of the idea of a made-up story based around reality. But either way, to me that doesn't really matter, because it's really a great tale. Because what he does is he takes someone who's famously known as being a war general. He died young. He died at like the age of 39. And he brings it to a level of showing us the humanity in this war general, a moment where it shows a different side of somebody. It shows a connection between a father and a daughter. I really particularly am drawn to the words of comfort. Don't worry about your old pa. I'll be back for apple blossom time. You know, it's that idea of, you know, letting a child know not a specific month, but, you know, right around the time that you'll be back. What else? What did he say that about? You know, the prayer that the war ends quickly was another great part. And then of course the wife giving the sound advice. Now you listen here, don't let any bullets get you. There's a bit of humor to that, even though it's dark. It's a dark humor, but it captures the way that some people care by giving orders. You know, because basically you get the idea of she knows it's out of her control. I just really just found this a great approach to the chosen prompt. And I liked how he brought us another side of somebody who was famously known for war. So very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I thought that this was a great story told by Daniel. And I thought it was interesting because the prompt was a small picture of a carousel. And he got this out of it. And I thought that was intriguing. It kind of resonated in the back of my mind with old Shirley Temple movies you saw with her and her father goes off to war. Somehow it just drew that up in my head. But from what I just peeked and saw, you know, Stonewall Jackson never returned from the war. So that was just his reassurance to his family in the beginning. And, that's kind of sad when you look at it from that point of view. But make the women folk less worried when you're leaving. So I said that, but I thought it was great imagery, and I thought it was well penned. So nice job, Daniel. I find it intriguing that you went that direction, and it worked, definitely. Nice job.
Yeah, I have to agree, and I like that you brought that movie. I remember that movie, The Little Princess with Shirley Temple. That was a good one, and that was a really, yeah.
That was true.
Yeah, that was a good prediction.
Yeah, a lot of good ones. Oh, but yeah, so anyway, those came back into my head. Because when I was a child, every Saturday morning you sat there and you watched Shirley Temple start, you know. At least as girls did. I don't know about the boys. But not all of us, I guess. But, you know, that was where I was every Saturday. A lot of fun. But now, even after that one, they say, oh, it's not good. Whatever. You know. But I thought that was a great great job on Dan's part. So, yeah.
Definitely. And... Mm-hmm. And Scott, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
I really like the idea. I think you're right, Pam, about it being historical fiction. I really like, though, that he took that picture of a carousel and created a story that sat in the time of the Civil War. And so I really do like the feel of it. And there's quite a few other things about it as well that I thought were really good. I also feel like he created some sense of reality in the way that the wife kind of like matter-of-factly says goodbye to him. You know, it's not a, you know, I mean, she's got tears in her eyes, but at the same time, I think women were very tough back in those days, and they did much of the work around the ranch, the house, the farm, whatever the case may be. They certainly were very hardworking and stuff, and I think that, you know, you get the sense of a toughness in this woman as she's saying goodbye to him and saying, you know, don't let any bullets hit you, kind of a thing. But anyways, just overall, I got a very good, comfortable sense out of it, and thought that he did a really good job using the prompt that he was given and creating some sort of a historical fiction home. So, very good job, Daniel.
Absolutely. And yes, historical fiction, definitely a perfect word for it. And, you know, so, and you're right, there was a sense of strength and a sense of reality in the way that the wife said goodbye. So, great observation. And Jean, do we have anybody on the line?
We do. We have Weaver on the line. Hi, Kate.
Hello. I'm here.
Oh, my God, we can hear her, too. Yes.
Hey, I'm glad you could join us.
Thank you. It's been a very long and arduous trip. Hello.
Hey, we have another caller. Oh, my gosh. Hang on 1 second. Let's see who we have here. Hello, area code 217. Who's calling for you?
It's PC.
Oh,
hey,
PC, how are you?
Glad to join us.
Good to have you. Oh, so how is everybody on this fine Tuesday night? Well, I heard that.
Somebody's got a parrot.
Yeah, I got a bird here, so when I read or when I comment, I'll start going into the bedroom, but for the next 5 minutes, I'm kind of smoking a cigarette.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. I want one.
All right. Well, yeah, it's good to have you all here. Nice lineup. And Polly wants attention. All right.
Kisses, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, that'll be good.
All right. Up next, we have. Oh, is that wrong? Oh, I gotta actually post it. Here we go. Oh, is that wrong? By Julie Buck. And Weaver, will you give that a read for us, please?
I'm just checking. Yes, just checking. I'm actually on. Yes, of course, no problem. Now, I'm sorry. I sound a little bit ropey, but my throat's going,
And
oh, no. I may cough. Well, anyway, here we go. I think about songs. I still want to hear poetry. I still need to write. I think about what's fair and see not much there. One thing, only one thing. I've been crying for, which if grace with this one thing would change the entire format of my fortitude. That's purple crazy, and my brain thinks it pink, though I see red every day, yet only feel blue, but expertly exit in black, exist in black. Depending on something else to complete me, I hate that. In the meanwhile, I even begin to stink. No more does. My world smells safe. Until I acquire what my female fragility needs to hold I'm like a live wire, sparking to shock my hurt into hiding. When your offspring have gone and fled, when your man is dead and has been gone forever, what's left for me anywhere? What does a woman do with such a scrip of which to no one it belongs? My own weeping jugular I want to sever. Oh, is that wrong? End poem.
Great, great read, Weaver, and excellent write by Julie. And Scott, your thoughts?
Well, there's definitely quite a bit of passion painted with colors here. You know, using the pinks and the feeling blue and living in black and those kinds of things representing feelings within the poem. As we go along and stuff, and we kind of learn what makes her feel blue is the way her life's kind of carried along until I acquire what my female fragility needs to hold. I'm like a live wire sparking to shock my hurt into hiding. So we can sense the feelings of needing more or something different. And then if you skip down past the two-line stanza to when your man is dead and has been gone forever, what's left for me anywhere and stuff. And unfortunately, it's very unnerving in the end with my own weeping jugular I want to sever. So the good thing is that she has poetry to release her feelings and hopefully find the peace that that the speaker needs within this poem. So it's a very nice write, very well penned by Julie Buck.
Absolutely, and unnerving was a great way to describe the ending, which I think really adds an impact. But yeah, she did a wonderful job, as you said, of using color to highlight and define emotions. So great observation. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, I think it was a great use of color by Julie. I think that she really did hit all the right notes with it. She used it in just the right places to bring forth the emotions and the thoughts and the peace. And I thought that was well done. And I thought it was sadness as well expressed throughout. And I thought it was nice work on her part. Job, Julie, and thanks for sharing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said. And Weaver, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Thank you. I did stumble a little bit, but I think it's just to do with the fact that I'm not feeling that wonderful. But yes, this is an incredible, this is somebody who just poured their heart onto the page. You know, if even a quarter of this feeling is actually being felt, that is so sad, so hard to live with, I imagine. But as it was said, you know, we have poetry to fall back on. We can get all of it out and write. And when it's out and it's written and it's on the screen and you can see it, I think you can go over it and then it doesn't seem quite so bad because it's words and words, you know, they're very good. I think I'm havering a wee bit here, but I think you might understand what I mean. I thought it really...
absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and it is oftentimes the darkest words, the darkest thoughts that are so important to get out because it's a healthy way to express sadness, it's a healthy way to express anger. You know, so I really liked the line, how she brought in the purple. That's purple crazy, and my brain thinks in pink, though I see red every day. Yet only feel blue, but expertly exist in black. Expertly exist in black makes me think of the whole idea of somebody who hides what they're actually feeling from people. You know, they put on that mask, they put on that shadow. And it definitely the ending did hit hard. And I wrote also like how she says, until I acquire what my female fragility needs to hold, I'm like a live wire sparking to shock my hurt into hiding. And I think within those lines and leading up to the ending, there's the whole idea of, you know, you truly can't understand all that I am constantly processing in my mind and all that I'm constantly going through. So just absolutely an amazing write and very well done. And all right, and I'll bring us on to the next poem. And let's see here. It is View from an Attic by View from an Attic by Garden Delights. And it goes like this. Her eyes didn't stray, held by invisible fibers, neither did they blink as a breeze filtered through filmy window dressings, teasing gossamer threads across her face, resting a hand on an old armoire, memories of an antique shop surface, bells tinkle with her steps into the past, and captivating slices of bygone lives, now embroidered with dancing dust motes. A slight musty odor slowly permeates. Melancholy fingers collide with a ragged edge, breaking the spell. Airy sheer flutters like butterflies against restless skin, thirsting for escape from worldly noise. She cherishes this finite coin, all the while avoiding a descent from her attic hideaway. End poem. And what a beautiful write by Garden's Delight. I really appreciate and enjoy that one. Is PC back? Is PC with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. And what are your thoughts on this poem?
I'm actually kind of still reading it. I was hung up on the one that Julie had wrote. I was wanting to comment on that. I had. So
oh, sure,
I was still ready to comment on that one. I hadn't quite moved on to this one yet.
Okay.
I'll comment on the next one if that's okay, though.
Yeah, I'll get back to you. No worries. All right. And let's see here. Weaver, your thoughts.
Yes, as you said, this is just beautiful. I like the way everything is light. Breeze filters through filmy window dressings, resting a hand on an old armoire, memories of an antique shop surface, tinkle with a step. I mean, it's just beautifully written. You know, you have a picture. The picture's painted for you. You can see the dancing duck most. You can smell the slightly musty odor, which you get around old things. I think old books smell wonderful to me. Yes, so everything, as I say, is airy and flutters about like a butterfly, but she's thirsting for escape. She's not actually enjoying this at the moment. She doesn't want to come out of the attic by the look of it, and just wants to stay where she is. But yes, beautifully written, and I thank you very much for sharing that with us, Garden Delights. It was lovely.
Absolutely. Well said there. And I like that you brought in the slight musty odor, because I think creating an atmosphere by adding scent in, like the musty odor, really helps you to really get a feel for the what's going on in the poem. So great observation. And Scott, your thoughts?
Yeah, I love this poem. It has a great nostalgic feel to it. Love the second verse, resting a hand on an old armoire, memories of an antique shop surface, bells tinkle with her step into the past amid captivating slices of bygone lives, now embroidered with dancing dust motes, a slight musty odor slowly permeates. And you know, just the whole picture that creates is literally walking into an old antique shop and stuff. Although she's in her attic and everything, you know, you get the sense of walking into an old antique shop and you smell that kind of old smell to it and everything else. And it's just really well pinned. And I really like the two-line stanza right below that with the melancholy fingers collide with a ragged edge. And I just picture her running her fingers along the edge of the armoire and kind of running into kind of like a snag, maybe a splinter type of an area that breaks her out of the spell she's in. And so I really like it. I think it's really well done. And, you know, and I also like it in the idea that she's escaping, thirsting for escape from worldly noise. She cherishes this finite coin, all the while avoiding a descent from her attic hideaway. So really like it. It's well done, and it creates a wonderful picture. So awesome job by Garden Delights.
I have to agree, definitely. And I like the way you brought up that one line, the melancholy fingers collide with a ragged edge, breaking the spell. The idea of the finger running into like a splintered edge and being awoken from like a daydream. And I thought this was beautiful all the way through. I really like the way she makes her stanzas flow and move. Wonderful use of the word gossamer and some great alliteration in teasing gossamer threads. You know, and you can just see.
I was going to say, you know how you said about the stanza? If you kind of look at the second stanza, it almost looks like the picture with the curtain blowing outward.
Oh, it does, doesn't it? Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to bet that's not an accident.
Oh, I bet you're right. And if it is, it's a happy accident. So that would be
so cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is really cool. I like it. It does match. The way the especially the second stanza flows really nicely the same way as the curtain in the picture. But, yeah, I like how this has a nostalgic feel, but it's almost a bittersweet nostalgia. You can't help but, you know, feel like this is somebody who wishes to go back to simpler times, that doesn't want to be, wants to stay away from the modern world because it's all just too much to try to handle. So just a beautiful emotive write and very well done. And PC, your thoughts on Garden Delights poem?
Yeah, I didn't think he was going to come back to me. That's what I said. I was focused on the other one, and I'm sorry. I'm distracted.
Oh,
I thought I was going to comment on the next one. Like,
sure, no problem. All right. And all right, let's see what we got next.
My buddy Bird.
All right, up next we have Mizzy Muddlepuff by T. Perry 898. And thinking who read last and all that stuff. And Jean, would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Okay. Mizzy Muddlepuff by T. Perry 898. Mizzy Muddlepuff, a fairy, gave a yawn and heaved a sigh, and then set off on her sky bike for adventures in the sky. Daisy wheels would clatter gently as they traveled through the blue. Seems our heroine just couldn't act like other fairies do. Mizzy loved the silver beetles and adored the rolling stones. She had attitude and plenty. There was music in her bones. Middlepuff would weave mad patterns high above the countryside and would seek a hidden crannies where the woodland creatures hide. Her machine was such a beauty, forged from stems of olive green that once sprouted in the garden just behind the runner beans. There were mudguards formed from willow and a tulip for a seat. A small chain of fairy teardrops made the bicycle complete. Fairy spoke in awe and rapture of the feat she undertook. With her passion came a feature film, a theme park, and a book. Lizzie Muddlepuff Skywalker watches angels passing by and will twinkle on forever, a ghost rider in the sky. End poem.
Well, that poem is so delightful. Such a great read, Jean. I have to say, this one just makes me smile and laugh. Love the rhyme and flow. I'm glad T. Perry was inspired. Really enjoyed this story of a fairy who has a love for adventure, a love for rock and roll, and a rebellious spirit. Some really great song and band references, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones. You know, I love the mention that third stanza all the way through is great. Even the mention of Ghost Rider in the Sky at the end was great fun. So, you know, I very much enjoyed this one here. And Weaver, your thoughts?
Yes, isn't this fun? I found it rather difficult because I had to keep going back to check the picture. It was so cute. And then you know, you'd see a tulip for a seat. And I'm back up saying, oh, yes, there's a tulip. I see it. And then another stand, another piece. I'm back up again to have another look. Beautifully done. I mean, everything about this is just beautiful because she's taken that picture and she's basically brought that little fairy to life. Absolutely gorgeous. I just thought it was just, and it bounced along. And then poor Mizzy Muddlepuff is a skywalker and watches angels passing by. But still, so beautiful. Very well done. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Scott, your thoughts?
Personally, I think this is a masterpiece. I mean, it's really well done. I really like the feel of it. It's something that I could see in a child's book or something like that, and it just being an absolute hit. It's cute all the way through it, and just a light sense, an airy feeling all the way through that just makes you smile, like Pam, I think you were saying earlier. So really, really well done, I think, T. Perry 898.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. And PC, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I tend to think deep about things, and what I liked about this was it was that end line, and I can't help but think they did it on purpose. It says a ghost rider in the sky, and it's a ghost rider. She's riding a bike, but also she's a ghost writer, WRITTER, because that's a they said in the beginning that she was somewhere in there. It was talking about she was writing in the sky. And I like the duality of that. There, it's a different spelling of the word, but both words fit there. Because I thought about it, it was like when they said Mizzy Muddlepaw and it said Skywalker, I wondered why they used Skywalker instead of Skywriter. But when you say Ghost Rider, it gets that same thought across, but and it's the wordplay. I like it. I feel like it's intentional wordplay. I like that dual meaning. That's my favorite part of them up the right.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, and wonderful observations on the wordplay, and definitely a fun write for sure. And let's see here. What do we got next? All right.
This one, things that sound strange. Right, right.
All right, let me see here. All right, I think I'm going to go ahead and do this. All right, got to get back and do. All right. And up next, we have Makeup by Weaver of Dreams. And Kate, you are nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So, Jean, whenever you're ready.
Okay, here we go.
Like any girl, I adore fashion, perfume, makeup, and shoes. I watch tutorials, gain tips and hints on color and application. Online shopping ensures I have every shape of brush required to apply the latest in eyeshadow, lipsticks, and foundation. Not wishing to brag, it has been said, I look pretty good for my age. All in all, life is good. One thing will always make me frown. After 960 years, I'm well aware that vampires have no reflection. Though I try very hard, I make a mess, which really brings me down. Being the only female vamp sucks, pun intended, of course. Never daunted, I enlisted the aid of the 6 guys in my bite. I was pleased at how eagerly they each fought for control over the brushes and makeup and got me ready to go out that night. Slipping on my sexiest, silkiest dress, I fluffed up my hair and left. As I walked into the nightclub, all in vain, I felt both sassy and bold. But when I asked for an AB negative on the rocks, the barman laughed in my face. "Who did this to you?" he gasped. "Apart from the dress, you look exactly like Ronald McDonald."
Oh, my God.
Oh. That one cracks me up. Great reading right there, Weaver. And Jean, let's start with your thoughts.
Oh, my God. That is too funny, Weaver. Way too funny, Kate. Way too funny.
You know, I'm going along with you. I'm going, okay.
I kind of like the direction you were going. And, oh, yeah, I got the 6 guys to help me get ready. And I went, okay. Sure. Okay, makes sense.
You can't see yourself.
But the ending, dynamite. I did not expect it at all, and I think it was a great twist. And I think you kind of probably took everybody by surprise a little bit. Really well done.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, great comment, Jean. And Scott, your thoughts.
Yeah, I certainly didn't expect the humorous twist out of Weaver. You know, I'm used to her doing really artistic work and wonderful reads and stuff. I didn't expect the humorous twists that she stuck into it. Some really good ones here and stuff. I do like the 6 guys in my bite. Several things as well. That she stuck in there, the name of the nightclub being All in Vain, like
mm-hmm.
that. Also, the asking for the AB negative on the rocks. So, yeah, very good. Had me smiling throughout, and just really well done.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. It was definitely one of those poems that had you smiling throughout. And I have to agree with you and Jean. That was a wonderful twist with it. Great humor at the end. So very cool comment. And PC, your thoughts.
960 years old, but she's a girl. It's like that age is of your mind, not of, you know, it's how old you feel. You know what I'm saying? She still considers herself a girl, but she's 960 years old and still feeling young. I know this is weird. You guys kept saying she and stuff, so it sounds like you know the poet as well, so it's like you understand it as she. But when I read the end, I was like, oh, my gosh, is this a man and cross-dresser? Like, I had to reread the whole poem to kind of see if it specifically said any she. I was trying to figure out a perspective to the poem, but I was like, man, because I thought about trying to wear makeup and cross-dress before. But But I think about it as well, if I did that, that's what I would look like. Would be Ronald McDonald. So that's why I thought about that. It made me really laugh because once again, I got this profoundly different perspective, I think, than anybody else has.
Right. Well, you know, we actually say she because Weaver is here with us. So say hi, Weaver.
Hello.
Yes.
Oh, and thank you very much for the comments. And could I just put in here, the vampire stage of the age, she was transferred into a vampire. So if she was vampirized when she was 25, mm-hmm. she'd stay looking 25, just to make that a little bit more clear, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that's what I said. I caught on to it. So, okay, she's 960 years old, but she still feels young.
Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful vampire. Great comments, everybody. Wonderful vampire, right, Weaver? I love your ability to tell a good story. And you've got this, your wonderful dark sense of humor in here. I liked all the little like references of like the nightclub being titled All in Vain, with the play on words on that. So that was great fun. And the order up of the A big B negative on the rocks and that great twist at the end. You know, so really, and oh my goodness, you know, I just cannot imagine asking, can you imagine having six guys to put on your makeup and then showing up and being told you look like Ronald McDonald?
I have a sick mind.
Yeah. Oh, that cracks me up. And so great, right? And let's go ahead and see what we have next. And up next we have Bubblegum and Other Essentials by Mermaid. And PC, will you give that a read for us, please?
Bubblegum and Other Essentials by Mermaid. Lacquered curls. Practice swoons. Let me dance you through hooped perimeters. Hula's and skirted prom night flirts. La Pebra bottled. Hair slick moves. Cadillac pink light. Ignite night thighs. Flocks of winged bows. Searching plaintive pleas for a glimmer of bubblegum essentials. End poem.
Great read, PC.
Sorry, I'm sure I haven't did this so long. I'm so out of practice.
No worries. And yeah, wonderful write by Mermaid. She's always got a great way of doing brevity. And Scott, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a really interesting write. I love the first line, lacquered curls. And, you know, I look at the vehicle here and I'm, you know, thinking of the curb lines and everything along what's a very sporty looking vehicle. Practice swoons, let me dance you through hooped perimeters. And I picture driving this car like through hula hoops and having fun with it and stuff. And then you have that next stanza with hulas and skirted prom night flirts. And so it just sounds like a fun vehicle that you're out doing great things in and those kinds of things. Cadillac pink lights, ignite night size. And so, yeah, it just has a great feel to it throughout. It's well penned and has some great images that bring it to life. So very good job on Mermaid's part.
Absolutely. This is definitely a poem that's full of life, you know, and wonderful imagery. So great comment there. And Weaver, your thoughts?
Oh, yes. It does. It moves along beautifully. My particular favorite is Hula's and Skirted Prom Night Flirts, La Pebera Bottled, Hair Slicked Moves. I love that. Hair Slicked Moves. Basically, you're feeling really confident because you've got your hair looking wonderful. You've looked in the mirror. This is a chap, obviously. It's a chap. I don't think a lady would slick her hair. But yes, it's very evocative. It gives you, again, pictures. You can see what's happening. But I like the flocks of winged bows. I like that. I presume ladies wear a lot of bows. Anyway, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was beautifully written. And thank you very much, Mermaid.
Oh, I have to agree, definitely. I liked this one. I thought it had a wonderful nostalgic feel. It feels like it takes you back to, like, the 1950s. Like, you know, I honestly, like, and I know it's not from the 1950s, but it was, you know, the musical Grease. It takes me back to, you know, I can see the guys with their slicked back hair and, you know, yep. And, you know, and the poodle skirts. I just imagine poodle skirts. I imagine, you know, the confidence and of being young and being out there and being wild and free, you know, flocks of winged boughs searching plaintive pleas for a glimmer of bubblegum essentials. I feel like that's that kind of hopeful glint in a young man's eye that he's going to get that kiss that he's been waiting for all night. So just absolutely a delightful write and very well done. So, and let's see what we got next. All right. And, all right, here we go. All right, up next, we have Swimming with Celebrities by you, Scott. And go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
All right, so this one's based on picture number 11, which is kind of looks like a mansion to me, with a woman in a fancy white gown plunging into what looks like floor-to-ceiling water. And so, based on that, as soon as I saw the picture, I started writing, and this is what I came up with. So, Swimming with Celebrities by S. Sharp. She plunged into her chosen future, fine Valentino Garavani gowns. Her name world-renowned, crowds adoring, swarming, Hollywood glitz, night on the town, camera shutters sounding like machine gun fire. She was admired by millions, red carpet Academy hit, any girl attached to this hip, fans screaming, dreaming, Hollywood talk of the town, paparazzi alone forming a crowd. Their mansions sprawling, a life enthralling, ever monitored, followed, Charlize Theron. Seven cars trailing in a grocery store run. Depp living abroad like a fugitive, living on the run from the American media. The public sensation of so many stars, but in private, many are left in scars. Jennifer Lawrence drowning at home, isolated by stardom, left dating her public image that others created for her. Absorbing online attacks. Eva Mendes debilitating nerves, hanging with her therapist in her free time. Adele, social phobia and stage fright, eating her from the inside out. since she is singing her song, Can't Let Go. There's something there, and it's carrying the show. Clooney wishing for a walk in Central Park at noon, but afraid he will be mugged by fans who all wish they could live their lives, which for that, Kristen Stewart says, fame is the worst thing in the world, especially if it's pointless. When people say, I want to be famous, why? You don't do anything. Maybe, except drown at home. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Scott. I'm always glad when you can call in to read your poetry or make a recording, preferably calling in, because it's nice to have your company. I found this one really impressive. I like how it can fit any time period, and yet you very clearly bring us to modern times with the mention of, you know, Charlize Theron, and especially with the mention of, Johnny Depp, you know, Depp living abroad like a fugitive, living on the run from the American media. I like the general vibe and message that I get from this, which is that it's the downside of fame and the struggles that come with that having no freedom to be yourself or no freedom just to do whatever you want. Like the idea that Clooney can't go for a walk in Central Park at noon, but Clooney wishing for a walk in Central Park at noon, but afraid he will be mugged by fans. Or even when you bring up like Eva Mendes' debilitating nerves hanging with her therapist in her free time, you can imagine the impact that this has on a person's nerves. And yet, you know, it is part of like when you choose to go into a career that brings you fame, this is what comes along with it, you know. So really just I like the raw, honest feel to it. It's a very observational poem. You know, it's not a first-person narrative. It's the idea of somebody observing the world of Hollywood and paparazzi going on around them. So very well done. And Weaver, your thoughts?
Oh, yes, this was so well done. It's so well done. All these people, I mean, I've learned things about people I knew nothing at all about. So this is great for me because I get a little insight into what's happening. Jennifer Lawrence hasn't drowned, has she? No, she's just drowning at home. That's good. But yes, I thought all of these names and all of the things that you managed to attribute to them, I thought was wonderful. I just think you did that so very well. And thank you very much for sharing it.
Yeah, now you get to hear some of the Hollywood United States gossip from across
yes.
the pond.
Yes. A lot more interesting than my gossip, let me tell you.
I'd like to hear some of that Scottish gossip.
Well, I can tell you so many stories about that Loch Ness Monster, but I won't because her reputation is her own.
Oh, too funny. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, you know, Scott, I thought this was such an intriguing take on that prompt. You know, I looked at the prompt. I went over and I said, oh, let me see what it is real quick. And I looked at it, and I came back, and I started reading this, and I'm going, wow, that took him here. And I enjoyed the piece very much. I thought it was very well expressed. And I thought you did a really wonderful job with it. Very well done. It was so clever how you just took that image and you turned it into this. It made perfect sense. It really did. It made perfect sense why you would go this route. I just thought it was, very clever. Very clever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Great comment, team. And PC, your thoughts?
You know, it's subtle, but once again, here it is with my PTSD perspective. But whenever I read the therapist, I had to think about it because it was the first time I had a
person come over in 10 years as my therapist. I was all so excited and everything. And after I thought about it, no, it's probably a physical therapist. But once I thought about that, I thought about the camera shutter sounding like a machine gun fire. Everybody else, a normal person without PTSD, it's a camera. But someone with PTSD, oh, my gosh, it's machine gun fire. You know, you're, like, freaking out under the pressure. And now all of a sudden a normal common item sounds like something almost dangerous. It talks about being on the run on a grocery store run, Johnny Depp living abroad like a fugitive, living on the run. There it is, living on the run. It's like someone from PTSD, they're always running or hiding from someone, and then the person in the house, so they're hiding from the journalist, the paparazzi. To me, that's why I say it's subtle, but it's like, man, that's what would happen. All of a sudden, you get famous and you're stalked by the paparazzi. You know, you go to the grocery store, movie theater, everywhere you go, there they are. Or next thing you know, you have anxiety and stress all the time. I like it. It didn't bleed through. It wasn't overly done, but it was subtle. But it gives an honesty to the right, because that's the sadness of being famous, is you have no... Everything's public.
Exactly. Yeah, and that is very true. Like you said, everything's public. And, you know, with everything being public, it can cause a certain amount of anxiety. So, great comments, everybody. All right.
I did the research on this. Like, none of it's made up. Everything everything that's said here is literally attributed to each person. So, like, Charlize Theron had 7 cars trailing her to a grocery store run while she had her kids in the back seat. Depp lives abroad because he feels like he's a fugitive. That's why I put it in quotation marks. Those are his words. It's hardly what I consider one of my best poems by any stretch, but, it's where the picture took me, as Gene was saying. I saw this girl jumping into a flooded mansion, basically, and this is where I went.
I like it. I like it.
Thanks for your comments, everyone.
Absolutely. And I like that you did your research. Oh, very cool on that. All right. And up next we have With My Back Against the Moon by Forgotten Dream. And it goes like this. You left in the glaring midday sun, blending with sharp shadows, dissolving like liquid spilled on hot pavement. But twilight cloaked me in, dulcet periwinkle sheets, worn, faded skies blurring into bruised nighttime. The moon crashed down from the corner you hung it. Oceans churned inside, waves slapping fractured ribcage, sharp stings of salted wounds and throbbing contusions. Folding in on myself like organic origami, I drown in a pool of pining and reveries, flavors of creamy sugar mixed with metallic bitterness. Swallowing midnight, I let stars fill empty spaces, trickles of light, beacons, leading on a winding path out of a watery depth. And
no.
Foam.
I'm going to have to scorch you. You want me to scorch you? You're very good.
PC, put yourself on mute, please.
Wow.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Scott, your thoughts.
I really like a lot of this. This is just filled with some great metaphors and imagery throughout. You left in the glaring midday sun, blending with sharp shadows, dissolving like liquid spilled on hot pavement. You know, for a second, as the reading continued on, I stopped there, to picture the liquid being spilled on the pavement. And then it goes on, but twilight cloaked me in dulcet periwinkle sheets, worn faded skies blurring into bruised nighttime. You know, and you could just picture the bruise, all of that kind of stuff. This is really well done, and, you know, I'm not going to reread the whole poem. It's just a great poem. I love the title, how it fits with it, and just the feel of everything within it. So really well done.
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah, you know, I have to agree with you. It's definitely one of those poems that needs to be delved into more than once, not only to really, you know, get the full depth of the metaphors and the imagery, but also because, well, it's just a wonderful poem to me, you know, so great comment there. And Weaver, your thoughts?
Well, I agree with what everyone said. I think it's a beautiful poem. I like, but twilight cloaked me in dulcet periwinkle sheets, warm faded skies blurring into bruised nighttime. That is a beautiful stanza, isn't it? It just, again, it paints these pictures that I love. I love to see that. I read and then I can see the waves and I can feel the salt stinging. Yeah. I think it's, I love this line, folding in on myself like organic origami. That's beautiful. So good. So yes, I enjoyed it. I thought all of it was very, very good, right? And as you say, you want to go back and read again because you'll get a little bit more each time, I imagine, from it. So yes, Forgotten Dream,
oh, absolutely.
Beautifully done.
Absolutely. And I, too, really appreciated that line, folding in on myself like organic origami. And I think, you know, wonderful comments. I think you could take this poem either literally or metaphorically. And if you take it literally, there's a lot of things that seem to point to the idea of someone who is physically and emotionally abused, you know, the bruised nighttime, the fractured rib cage. But it could also be metaphorically in the idea of having a broken spirit. You definitely feel the grief, you feel the emotion in this. The mention of where was that? I know it was here somewhere. The moon crashed down from the corner you hung it, oceans churned inside. You know, I get the idea of someone, you know how they have that thing about promising somebody the moon, or I would give you the moon and stars, and it's the whole idea of finding that love where the person promised you the moon, but the moon they gave you wasn't real. It was this fake thing hanging in a corner that just easily was knocked down. And you definitely feel the sense of loss in this poem. So it's beautifully written and very well done. And PC, your thoughts?
My favorite part was the second to last stanza. I like that organic origami. And to me, it kind of makes me think of a flower from, like, it's not paper that's folded in flower, but the petals of the flowers fold kind of like origami. It makes me think about that. When I think with metallic bitterness, I was like, what are they trying to say there? And bitterness is a taste, and metallic is about the only thing I can think of that has a metallic taste that people normally eat would be like organ meat. And they're talking about creamy sugar mix. So there's something like sweet, like it's like someone's sweet, but at the same time they taste the metallic bitterness, and like organs are essential to life, your lungs, your heart, and it's like they're tasting of death. That's what I think of when I read that line with this metallic bitterness, because without your organs, you can't have life. You have to have them all. But that's what that made me think of. I was like, that's kind of clever because it makes me think of death, but they didn't actually
Yeah, yeah, I like that observation, and I don't think you're too far off. I don't know for sure, but, you know, I think of, like, when I see the phrase metallic bitterness, I think of how blood has that copper-type taste to it, and, you know, so it's almost like this bitterness that's in the blood, this bitterness that you hold deep within yourself. I mean, but of course, I don't know for sure. That's just my interpretation.
That still sounds like it comes from something internal. It's still internal, and blood is still a vital, essential element. So either way, we're still kind of perceiving it in the same general direction.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's
something
that's internal in the body, like, that's
yes,
what it makes
exactly.
It, you know.
Something internally processed. Great comments, everybody. All right. And up next, I have your poem, PC. Go ahead and give it a request, please.
Okay. I titled this one Celestial Eyes. A wide-eyed white tiger charges among static constellations while others have slept. Through the ages, she has been charging. White lightning flows through her veins. Electricity is flowing. She charged up fast. Her flashing body is striking. She's connecting. Sparks spark. She explodes. She's exploding with shooting sparks. Shooting stars burn up during the long fall. But she is exploding. Electricity arcs. Electricity is arcing in an arc furnace, smelting steel. Smelting steel is electrically conductive. Conductive is her iron core. Cobalt eyes conduct to the dark, where light tones are visual cues that lead a final charge. This powerful upwelling of currents, static zaps attack the lower back, provoking waves of convulsions. A tiger's charges, lightning strikes. The thunder is a roaring in poem.
Wonderful read and write there, PC. I have to say I really enjoyed this piece. First of all, on a technical level, it has a wonderful flow to it and great use of alliteration, especially some of the softer sounds like the S's and the W's. I'm always a big fan of. You know, white lightning flows through her veins, electricity is flowing, she charges up fast, her flashing body is striking, she's connecting. There's different things this makes me think of. First of all, it makes me think of the idea of the constellations in the sky and the universe in general. It also, for some reason, kind of makes me think of video games, and it makes me think of the guy Tesla with his machine that the electricity machine that you got, and there's that famous picture of him sitting right next to it and his hair standing up on end. And, you know, I just I love how this kind of takes my mind back and forth between the past and the present. He definitely chose the right imagery to, like, this is one of those that, you know, It's nice to know what prompt you wrote to, but I would have a pretty good guess at which one you did write to, even if it wasn't there, because you choose the right imagery for it. I really like sparks, sparks, she explodes, she's exploding with shooting sparks, shooting stars burn up during the long fall, but she is exploding. There's a real sense of somebody's internal powers, you know, and the strength they have inside of them, but almost the idea also of being the storm. So, you know, excellent write and very well done. And
thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And Scott, your thoughts?
Yeah, one aspect I think of really good writes and powerful writing, certainly not the only aspect, but one that is very powerful is repetition. And there's quite a bit of repetition in here. And oftentimes I think that repetition is used to emphasize key elements of the rite. And so, you know, within this, there are so many places where he is repeating things. She charged up fast, her flashing body is striking, she's connecting, spark, spark, she explodes, she's exploding with shooting sparks, shooting stars, burn up during the long fall, but she is exploding. So, you know, and then he goes on and electricity gets repeated like three times. Electricity arcs. Electricity is arcing in an arc furnace smelting steel. Melting steel is electrically conductive. Conductive is for iron core. So, you know, and the whole idea of it being, you know, the stars and then the combination of the tiger and it kind of pouncing on something kind of goes with a lot of the language that he's using, but the exploding and the electric feel of it and all of that. So very well done, Poetic Creations.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great comment, Scott. And Weaver, your thoughts?
Oh, excuse me. I don't think I'm going to be able to last much longer, so I'll just I've had a coughing fit, but I would like to talk about this because it's particularly beautiful. Spark, spark, she explodes. She's exploding with shooting sparks. I mean, yes, I'm very fond of electricity myself. I think it's a wonderful thing, and I think this is just equally wonderful. There's so much life, so much energy, and the fact that electricity, the word itself, is repeated with the shooting sparks just gives it that much more depth for me. You can feel melting steel. You can smell the ozone smell of the electricity arcing. So, yes, I think it's very, very well done, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Jean, your thoughts.
I knew you were going to do that. I was out here ready for three of them, and I turned away on those ones. Okay. And we're still on PCs, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We
just
are.
Making sure. I went ahead and got distracted. I thought it was wonderful imagery throughout this piece, PC. And, you know, all the sparks and the arcing and the electricity and all that. It was kind of like watching a fireworks display, and I thought that was really cool, and I thought it was a great take on that prompt.
Thank you. This one, I wrote it in about an hour, and I spent 10 hours editing it.
But
some of these lines, like, charged up fast. It's like a phone charging, but if you run up to someone, like, they're charging up fast. Every line, or not every line, there's many lines where I tried to give three different meanings. So is it a tiger? Is it a woman? Is it electricity? It's like a triple layer cake. It's like, which one are we talking about? Or are we talking about all three? It was kind of difficult to do that.
I like that. I like that. Very cool. Well, I'm glad you were inspired. So.
Oh, yeah, it was great. I like
it. Yeah. Yeah. Naomi always runs good contests, that's for sure. That's for sure. All right. And up next we have A Fairy's Pavane 2 by Jack Blue. And Weaver, would you be able to give that a read for us?
I will certainly try. We'll see how long my voice lasts. A Fairy's Pavane, Part 2. Is the twilight violet fully covers Mother Earth, her shadows or her memories might be mirrored in the skies or the infinite frontiers where no fantasy should fade. Her mosaic royal blue, whirling lento a piacente with a sea of snowy hues, looks a bit uneasy now, beside her ancient sapphire, waving a bright piano adagio. Can't say most of these words. One of yesterday's mirages, lingering around the moon, seems to be a resounding forte, like a lunatic ballad, rolling and meandering in quest of its chromatic grail. Let me paint her reverie, or tomorrow's resonance of the lunar violet sailing on her sapphire, or the ancient blue paving she plays allegro silently. Her violet shadows sail to the blue infinity. Space remembers her. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Weaver, and what an excellent write by Jack Blue. And PC, your thoughts? Okay, PC must be on mute or stepped away. And Scott, your thoughts?
I remember reading just a few days ago. I was probably on air with you, Pam. The Fairies Pavane One, and I remember really liking that. And this one, as a follow-up to it, is very well done as well. You know, I like a lot of the images he creates in his poetry. Her mosaic royal blue whirling lento appassionato with a sea of snowy hues looks a bit uneasy now beside her ancient sapphire waving bright piano adagio. I mean, that's just a really well worded, word for word stanza. And like I say, he just paints a very brilliant picture all the way through. And I really love the last line, space remembers her. So anyways, it's a great follow-up to the first one. And great job by Jack Blue.
Absolutely. I do enjoy the way that he brings us those, you know, little storylines. You know, that, like you said, part one, part two, all that. So it's fun to see what he comes up with next. And it's a wonderful comment. And Weaver, your thoughts?
Oh, hello. I hope you can hear me. I've lost my little red light. Can you hear me?
Yep, we hear you.
Okay, thank you. yes, this... Fairies Pavane, I don't even know how to... Sorry about not being able to pronounce some of the words. I do apologize for that, Jack. I get the idea, which is great. I understand. But at the moment, I didn't manage to actually pronounce some of them properly. So, again, my apologies. But we have the twilight violet fully covers Mother Earth. Her shadows or her memories might be mirrored in the skies. Yeah, it's lovely. I'll have to go back and find the other one, part one, so I can read that too, I think, because that would be nice. Yes, I thought it was beautifully done. I think the words he chose were fabulous. I like when it's something that I haven't heard before or it's new to me, because, it, you know, we're learning. We all learn, and I think that's a wonderful thing about this particular, I think it's great that we can learn something and read beautiful poetry at the same time. So thank you very much, Jack. I enjoyed it.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. It is a wonderful thing to be able to, you know, read poetry and to learn together and all that. So wonderful comment there. And, yeah, I really liked how his use of color, his use of imagery. This has a beautiful flow to it. I have to agree with Scott that second stanza with her mosaic royal blue whirling lento is particularly just, it's fascinating. It's beautiful. I really also like Let Me Paint Her Reverie or Tomorrow's Resonance of the Lunar Violet Sailing on Her Sapphire of the Ancient Blue Pavane. I really like how he brings in the different shades of blue and intertwines the use of musical phrases within this. I thought it had a wonderful personification of Mother Earth. I felt like it was the idea of, it was very captivating. And to me, it was that kind of idea of that love, that connection between space and Earth, and how, you know, the world is constantly in motion, you know. So just a beautiful write and very well done. All right. Let's see what we got next. And all right, up next we have Day Trip by Diane D. And Scott, would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Hopefully I can make it sound the way Diane would like it to. Day Trip by Diane D. I haven't been downtown since voting COVID in as mayor. And now, holy sheep shit, gas is $1.95 a liter. Last time I even drove, Domo had a 97 cent a liter Monday. Took the transit system, and this young man offered his seat, age marks a date on the calendar. It says, "You are elderly." Nastiest was the look on his face when I snapped, "Don't call me ma'am." I used to know downtown, like Santa Claus knew my mom, strolled the streets like I owned them, because I actually did at one time. I hung out underneath the pink exit sign atop the cinder block YMCA. It was like looking down from a high rise onto a burned out ashen city. I realized that, like me, the bricks and sidewalks aged. They were cracked, chipped, and bare. No payphones or newspaper boxes found. Tops of brazen skyscrapers smirking their authority like an army captain. Construction on every corner. My bus deposited me onto an intersection 16 blocks from the building I needed. I was 30 minutes late for my appointment. Couldn't find the building because of the realtor for lease signs in every window. Walking into that room, rehearsing why they could not refuse me, only to find that my appointment was next week. I elected not liking downtown this year. And so...
Wonderful read there, Scott. I have to say, I really enjoyed this one. It was so relatable to me in so many ways. I mean, I don't live in a downtown big city, but, you know, especially this ending, you know, where you find out that your appointment isn't until next week. That is so something that I would do. You know, to me, like I said to her, I thought that this was an excellent write that manages to be both edgy and humorous at the same time. It takes us into the big city, into post-COVID time, you know, and it takes us in the mind of someone who at one point either actually, like, was well off and owned things, or just felt like they were, you know, they knew everything about the city. They were the it person of the city. And you know, they're just kind of now at the point where they're lost. And what they once really enjoyed, what was once familiar to them, it just really all of a sudden becomes irritating. It becomes something that you no longer want to be a part of. You know, I like the attention to the details and I used to know downtown like Santa Claus knew my mom. Wonderful humor there. Strolled the streets like I owned them, because I actually did at one time. I hung out underneath the pink exit sign atop the cinder block YMCA. So, excellent write all the way through, and very well done. And PC, your thoughts on Diane's poem?
There's a lot of imagery in this. It's like
like one could understand how a person could get lost and confused in a city like that. I grew up in the country, man. I went to Chicago one time. Let me go back home. But I like the imagery of the poem and how they did the comparison of the bricks and the shipping. I can't find it now, but they're talking about the cinder blocks or they were cracked, chipped, and bare. No payphones or newspaper boxes were found. It's like, I still remember them payphones, but that was, gosh, about 20, 25 years. You can't even find one now. I mean, that was 25 years ago. So they're talking about a time, a long time ago, that changed over a decade. And yeah, it can be overwhelming at times. It seems like time just flies by so fast, and the world around us changes so quickly. I liked it. I like the visuals most.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. It does become overwhelming when change happens over time. Even if it happens over a long period of time, you know, it can definitely be overwhelming. So great observation. And Scott.
Yeah, I love Diane's stuff. She writes really well. And, you know, there's so many cool things about the story that exists here. I really love the way it starts off. I haven't been downtown since voting COVID in as mayor. And now, holy sheep shit, gas is $1.95 a liter. And, you know, right from the beginning, she kind of drew me into this. And, you know, I like it in that second stanza, I took the transit system and this young man offered his seat. Age marks a date on the calendar that says you are announced elderly. Nastiest was the look on his face when I snapped, "Don't call me ma'am." You should have, Diane, I won't say how old you are and everything, but I would have just showed him my ARP card and said, "See, I'm not that old." but with that being said, you know, and then I also love the second to last stanza too. Tops of brazen skyscrapers smirking their authority like an army captain, construction on every corner. My bus deposited me onto an intersection 16 blocks from the building I needed. So, you know, just the whole thing, it gives you a great sense of what's going on. It's clear and understandable throughout it, but it has many really cool images in it, which, you know, to me is something I really enjoy in a poem. I like the sense of truly understanding what's happening and, you know, mixed in with the art of poetry. And I think Diane does a really great job of that. So, as always,
oh, I know. Absolutely, absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. All right. And up next we have Breathe by L.M. Samurai and PC. Will you give that a read for us, please? Are you on mute, PC?
Sorry, I'm here. I got it.
Okay.
Non-recoil weapons embrace cremation beautifully. Cutting-edge general linguistics, destructive, detect iron, purple, spiral in discourse, purple food, footnotes, internalization of spending, desperate and nonsense approach. Get dressed and sing, you are bound by a collar. Sing carnations, unstoppable. Robot. It's a fairy tale. Delete it from history. Make it spell. Discourse. Words I carelessly collect. Purple bags with the beetle. Walk like a millennial disaffected. Purple idea. Purple absurdity. No personification. Get well. Pretty purple teeth. Purple slavery. Purple apocalypse. Breathe. Hold your breath. Take it in. End poem.
Great read, PC. And I have to say, it's always intriguing to me and just a delight to see how the same prompt will inspire people differently. I have to say that, you know, LM has this way with color and imagery. And this is very haunting, you know, to me. That's one of the words that comes to my mind. You know, it's I felt it had really strong metaphors and imagery. And the general thought that I got from this was the idea of the mind control of the blind masses. I like how she says purple idea, purple absurdity, no personification, get well, pretty, purple tease, purple slavery, purple apocalypse. That is just a clever made up word. You know, I think within those lines, I think of the word purple, and I think how at one point it was one of the most expensive colors because for a long time, you know, man-made purples, and they were made out of, like, you know, crushed shell, or I think there was also a type of a crushed bug that it was made out of, and it was a very rare color, so only people of royalty had it. And so when she brings in this idea, this purple idea, this purple absurdity, to me, it speaks of royalty, but maybe not literally royalty, but people in charge who are coming up with ideas that don't work for the common people, who make the world fall apart. And I might be overly politicizing this. She could just be having fun playing with words. But cutting edge general linguistics, destructive detect, iron purple spiral and discord, purple food footnotes, internationalization of spending. I really do get that sense of being bonded into a slavery by somebody else's words, and not seeing that you can actually have the freedom to speak your own mind. But just a really intriguing write all the way through, and very well done. And Scott, your thoughts?
Well, I was either totally off or you were 100% right, because I agree with you. So realistically, I felt the same way, that it's kind of like we're robots in a society told what to do, destructive detect, iron purple spiral in discourse, purple food footnotes. Like we're dwindling from a better society to a lesser one. It's kind of the feel I get out of that stuff right there. Cutting edge general linguistics, destructive detect, iron purple spiral in discourse. Like it's going downward. Purple food footnotes, internationalization of spending, desperate nonsense approach. Get dressed and sing, you are bound by a collar. Sing carnations, unstoppable robot. So, yeah, I kind of agree pretty much with what you just said almost to a T, the absurdity of it all. Another thing I kind of really liked about this was the comment, walk like a millennial, disaffected. Like, this is okay to them. And I get the feeling that the speaker in the poem does not feel it's okay. So breathe, hold your breath, take it in. Anyways, yeah, I felt it was a social commentary myself. So very good job, Sam Rai.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment there. And PC, your thoughts. And let's see, is PC still with us?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. I didn't realize I'm here. I didn't realize I was on mute. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, I like the first part because it talks about general edge, general linguistics. They got general capitalized like it's an individual. It's a proper noun. It's a person. In my opinion, it's about harsh language. It's like someone burns someone. They talk about embrace cremation. Like someone says something real bad, oh, you got burned. They burned you. Non-recoil weapons like swords or fire, and it says cutting edge. In my mind, it's they're they're talking about general linguistics. It's like an attack. Someone got attacked verbally. Non-recoil weapons embrace cremation beautifully. Cutting-edge general linguistics destructive and beautifully. It's almost like it's intentional. Like they just let it go without thought or without care, regardless. And they unleash their words, which were destructive, and it burns someone. It's like that's why I get at it. I thought it was a very clever way of talking about using words as a weapon. They absolutely hurt and destroy and kill your soul. I mean, words hurt.
Absolutely. You're right about that. Their words are very powerful, and they can be used to build up or they can be used to hurt. So great observation. All right. And up next we have Rainbow Fairy by Poet Traveler. And it goes like this. She and her little furry friend dance upon the rainbow high, surrounded by butterflies and flowers. They reach up there to touch the sky. Rainbow Fairy and her dancing cat are keepers of the curve that sends its multicolored rays that shine after the showery raindrops end. She and her little furry friend dance upon the rainbow high, surrounded by butterflies and flowers that reach up there to the sky. End poem. And what a delightful rhyming poem by Poet Traveler. I really enjoyed this one. And Scott, your thoughts.
That's another one that I could literally see in a child's poetry book and everything, and one that would engage lots of kids in it. So, you know, Rainbow Fairy, and, you know, the picture is really cool, and then her description of what's going on, you don't really need to look at the picture to see what she's talking about, but, you know, with the picture there, it makes the poem even more powerful and everything too. And it just has that child poetry feel to it for me, and I just think it would be something that would appeal to, you know, publishers of that type of genre.
Yeah, I think it would be nice to see Poet Traveler have this published in a book of children's poetry. It does. It relates well to the young and the young at heart. And, you know, I think every good story character has a furry sidekick like a dancing cat. So, great comment. And PC, your thoughts.
Yeah, I thought it was cute. I like the arcing. It's like the rainbows and stuff. There's actually two rainbows in that picture. I really liked how they incorporated that. And the reaching up, the touch the sky. The figure is a very, very tall woman, and she's not just reaching up, she's reaching up to touch the sky, like she's actually touching it. She's so tall, and I really like that. And it does have that child feel to it, like like you're growing up, you're reaching up, growing up. I like it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, yes, great comment. And, all right. Up next we have Cast It Out of Her Home by Blue Butterfly. And Scott, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yeah, give me just a second to get to it. Here we go. All right. Cast It Out of Her Home by Blue Butterfly. Falling into oblivion. Down into a bottomless pit. It's never ending. I just keep descending. I scream, but voice is broken. trying to reach high, but the sky is far away. Hit the bottom, nothing but dirt and darkness. No light reaches my eyes. Choking on my breath, the wings I was gifted are weighing me down. Thrown away like trash, to always be alone and forever forgotten in foam.
Wonderful read there, Scott. And I have to say, I haven't seen a whole lot of Blue Butterfly's poetry. I'm going to have to check out more of her. She has to me a beautiful style, extremely emotive. I like how, to me, this describes someone being pulled down into the pits of depression. That was a wonderful take on the prompt. I like how dark and visceral she gets with choking on my breath, the wings I was gifted are weighing me down. And bringing in the wings of the picture works well, but it also works well for the idea of how oftentimes, you know, in the beginning of life, when we're young, we have those wings, we have those abilities, we feel like we can conquer anything. And then as you know, circumstances and people and depression weighs down heavy on us, we forget how much our spirit is capable of, or we can no longer feel like we're capable of, you know. So just a wonderful write, and I really look forward to reading more of her. And Scott, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I've actually come across Blue Butterfly a few times, written for a couple of her contests and stuff, and I would agree that she's an emotive writer. She definitely puts emotion into, I think, largely everything she writes. And I was drawn to the same stanza you were reading just a moment ago, choking on my breath, the wings I was gifted are weighing me down. And I picture the same thing that you were speaking of in children who, you know, through all of their innocence and their parents telling them that they can do anything, you know, have this beautiful vision of what life's like. And then unfortunately, circumstances, as you were saying, tend to chip away at that. And eventually, at some point, when you've been told you can't do things enough and everything else, that like the last line of the second stanza, the sky seems very far away. And so, you know, it's a great write. It has great, clear meaning to it, and just really well done with the prompt that she chose to write to.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. Great comment. And we will have 5 carryovers, and I'm not sure where they'll go, but once I know, I will let people know. If you didn't hear your poem read tonight, we'll get it read on another show. Thank you very much to Fill My Eyes, as always, for being a wonderful co-host and all she does in the background. Thank you to Weaver, Scott, and PC for calling in. Thank you to Naomi for running this wonderful contest. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, who is listening now or will be listening later. You know, for anybody who is, you know, dealing with stuff like sickness in the household or whatever else is going on in your life, you know, we offer up our positive energy, our prayers, and our thoughts for you, because I know there are some few people with things going on. And, you know, I just really, truly appreciate you all. And this was a wonderful show. And Phil, anything you'd like to say?
Nope, I just want to thank you guys for all calling in. Pam, excellent show as always. Thank you, Naomi. Hope to see you soon. Thank you, Weaver. I hope you feel better. And prepare yourself. Everybody keeping it brief tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Sorry, almost screwed up. And thanks, everybody. Have a great night.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Yeah.